webcasting to the world live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, December 2nd, 2009, the only second day of December 2009 in the world. Welcome in on this midweek edition of GKO. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for logging on all over the planet, whether you are live or on the archive. We're happy to have you with us. If you are live, we want to hear from you tonight at 1-800-436-3260. Get in early and often. That is the Glenn Klein online toll-free hotline, 1-800-436-3260. And now, please welcome the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution in Chile, Houston, Texas, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Amen. It's chilly, brother. How are you tonight?
Chilly Willy out there, eh?
Yeah, I bet you've got it all warm and nice in Tampa, though.
No, it's not warm and nice. It is warm, but it is blustery, and we've got weather coming in. And we are praying that the Lord would hold back all negative weather effects.
Until?
It's not working because the wind earlier this afternoon blew our screen off of our lanai.
Well.
And, of course, I immediately searched my heart to see where I had let Satan in to allow the wiles of the devil to get into our lives. Nothing was revealed to me, however.
Well, you didn't have to pray. You could have just called me. I could have told you.
Well, it's the same thing, praying, calling Michael. Fairly similar thing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are glad to have you along. We would be remiss not to begin the webcast. And by the way, we, of course, were off last week. We want to wish everybody in the United States of America a happy Thanksgiving, belatedly, and our boy Sean O'Halloran, who is now waiting diligently to hear from you at 1-800-436-3260, was on vacation with his fam in the Midwest in St. Louis, so we were off last week. Glad to be back on. Lots of news in the world, but we would be remiss, beautiful humans, not to address this whole thing with the world's greatest golfer, probably the world's most admired and recognizable athlete, brother Tiger Woods, who's had some difficulty here in Florida recently. And, Michael, the reason that I want to address this is primarily because it is so nice and salacious. But beyond that, because of the apology, the repentance, if you will, that Tiger released today. I want to read it to you folks who have not yet heard it or read it yourself, because it is full, Michael, of religious imagery and phraseology, and I want to address it from many different angles because it's so interesting from a gospel perspective. But here, this is from Tiger Woods' website. He says, "I have let my family down, and I regret those transgressions with all of my heart. I have not been true to my values and the behavior my family deserves. I am not without faults, and I am far short of perfect. I am dealing with my behavior and personal failings behind closed doors with my family. Those feelings should be shared by us alone. Although I am a well-known person and have made my career as a professional athlete, I have been dismayed to realize the full extent of what tabloid scrutiny really means. For the last week, my family and I have been hounded to expose intimate details of our personal lives. The stories, in particular, the physical violence played any role in the car accident, were utterly false and malicious. Ellen has always done more to support our family and shown more grace than anyone could possibly expect. But no matter how much or how intense curiosity about public figures can be, there is an important and deep principle at stake which is the right to some simple human measure of privacy. I realize there are some who don't share my view on that, but for me, the virtue of privacy is one that must be protected in matters that are intimate and within one's own family. Personal sins should not require press releases, and problems within a family shouldn't have mean public confessions. Whatever regrets I have about letting my family down have been shared with and felt by us alone. I have given this a lot of reflection and thought, and I believe there is a point in which I must stick to that principle, even though it's difficult. I will strive to be a better person and the husband and father that my family deserves. For all those who have supported me over the years, I offer my profound apology. So that came from Tiger Woods in the wake of his one-car accident outside his Orlando area home. Michael, the interesting thing about this five-paragraph apology, it's laced with Christianese. He talks about transgressions. He talks about the grace of his wife. He talks about his personal sins. And if we take a look at it from a bigger picture standpoint, because obviously everybody from the President of the United States on down have been involved, and obviously there are multiple hundreds of millions of people, billions of people perhaps, that are engaged in extracurricular marital activities, extramarital activities tonight. And according to Jesus, if you even think about it, that's considered an extramarital affair. How much has evangelical Christianity sunk into such a place in our society that even a professional golfer has got to make this kind of apology to continue on with his career and to even put his family back together?
Well, it's it gets complicated when you are the most popular sports figure in the world. I think the terminology doesn't bother me that much in light of the fact that he is not saying that he transgressed against God. He did transgress against their marriage, against their commitments to each other, and it doesn't bother me that much. I am happy that he wasn't doing a Jimmy Swaggart, I've sinned against the old Lord thing.
Well, he does kind of reference that. I mean, he talks about that he has violated his own values. I mean, he kind of leans into that. But the question that I have, or the issue that I have, is that where he talks about that he has personally sinned, that he's violated this relationship with his family. If he has not sinned against God, if he has not sinned vis-a-vis the Ten Commandments, should it be considered a sin in his own personal life? And if it is, doesn't that besmirch and really condemn the whole marital contract and the whole construct of modern marriage in our culture?
Well, there's going to be terminology that people use, the term sin, the term transgress, and when people are using those terms in relationship to each other, it doesn't bother me at all that they would use it in reference to their own personal life and toward the people that they love, because I think he did. Now whether I would use the exact terminology or not is another thing. But and of course, in relationship to God, I mean, we can go all the way to the issue of, if you've thought it, you've done it. But I don't believe that's what he was addressing, and even though I used the terminology that everybody's going to be comfortable with, I think I'm equally as impressed that he did refrain from saying that this was an offense toward God. He did say that he went against his own
values, and a person can go against their own values, betray themselves, betray the people that we love, and even though, like you say, it's laced with all of the terminology that comes from the Bible, I think I'm equally as impressed that he didn't, like I said, do the Jimmy Swaggart thing and make it as something that is a plea toward God, that it is something he's got to work on with between himself and his wife and his children, depending on how much they know of it or are aware of it, for sure.
Yeah, but do you think that he actually feels bad about what he did or about the fact that he got caught?
I just don't know. You know, none of us want to get caught, number one, regardless of what it is. None of us want to get caught. But of all of us who never want to get caught, there are some people who really feel bad about what they've done. And,
but do you think that he did anything morally wrong?
Morally,
and this, of course, goes beyond Tiger Woods. I mean, this would extend to John F. Kennedy and Bill Clinton and Mark Sanford and David Letterman. I mean, you know, the list goes on,
yeah,
to Glenn Klein.
Absolutely.
And
well, morally is determined by what you've made agreements with other people that are in your life, and you agree to these standards.
But
and
isn't
that
the construct,
morality?
But isn't the construct of the religious marriage, the Christian and Jewish understanding, and the Muslim understanding, if I can extend it that far, to marriage, isn't that the thing that in many cases propels men to do, and women for that matter, to do these things and then to feel guilty for doing them?
It definitely can, for sure. And I've spoken about that for years. The confines of breaking a law with God is again, and that's the reason I said that I'm impressed that he did not make this a conversation or a plea toward God for forgiveness. He's addressing, you know, those that are involved. Now, he doesn't need my forgiveness. I mean, there is a public who is interested in what he does and does not do, and, you know, holds him to a standard that he has willingly participated in. So, I don't have a problem with him apologizing or addressing the fact that he, quote, transgressed against his wife and family. If you're going to deal with something like this, that's where it should be dealt with, not in some sobbing religious display. It just all depends on what kind of commitments that you have made to the people in your life as to whether or not you've had, quote, a moral failure. If I was in business with somebody and I did those people wrong that I was in business with, or if I had a product that I was misrepresenting, that would be a moral failure on my part, because I have agreed that I am going to do something and I'm going to do it in a certain way, and I'm not doing that. So,
the gospel, for the sake of discussion right now, and obviously most of the people that are listening to the sounds of our voices right now understand what we mean when we say apart from the gospel and the understanding of God's redemption and his view and opinion of us, would you equate a theft from a business partner, for example, to infidelity in marriage?
And again, that is it depends on the people involved. If I had made a commitment to someone and made a promise of fidelity, I would equate it as the same as far as needing to. Now, one is a crime, and the other one is a is that you're not going to go to jail or have a criminal charge against you for infidelity in a relationship that you have agreed that is going to be a certain way. But as far as morals are concerned, and everyone that has heard me speak knows that the issue of spirituality and morality, while they are both very important subjects, they are mutually exclusive, actually. And but yes, it is a moral, it is a moral failure. If you are in a situation where that you have where you've not made those commitments, then it isn't. That's just the way that I see it. It has nothing to do with spirituality. Now, again, I mean, we could talk all day about the pressure that a religious commandment on a relationship has as far as the subject of marriage is concerned. But we're just dealing with this as what is morality, and because morality is different for different people. And that I totally agree with. And understand as best as I know, I do understand that. But that is what we construct for ourselves, and what I have set up for myself as whatever I consider to be a standard for life. Then I can disappoint myself, for whatever reason that I may have, that I have certain standards that I say that these are the standards that I want to have in my life, for better or worse, or for richer or for poorer.
Right, but I think that the same principle, and correct me if I'm wrong, holds true that whether it be a law that has come from on high, if you will, from the Ten Commandments and the other 603 commandments of the Old Covenant, or whether it's a law that we put upon ourselves to uphold something that is unnatural and unhealthy even, that there is a dividing line there. And that I don't think that, for example, it is natural or healthy to steal from a business partner, but I think it is very natural for people, especially men, to desire to copulate with more than one partner. And when you set up a law as you said, there's a law on most books from stealing from a business partner, and as well as there used to be laws against adultery and extramarital sexual activity in most municipalities. But when you set up that kind of law in your own life, whether it be an understood thing or thing that's not said even between boyfriend and girlfriend, or boyfriend and boyfriend, or girlfriend and girlfriend, that you are setting yourself up for failure, and that those things are different than literally ripping off. You are stealing nothing from a partner, except maybe time and emotion and energy, if you are involved with somebody else emotionally or sexually.
Well, if you're lying about that, you've stolen a lot.
Yeah, but why do people lie
you've
about?
Stolen
it?
Trust. But there's it's just the fact that there are people who are monogamous in nature, and there are those who are not. The issue is that we should be free to be able to understand who and what we are. The problem is that people who are not monogamous type people need to be with not monogamous type people. But the fact is there are monogamous type people, and who understand that the constraints of a relationship for raising children, and there's a lot of reasons for having a commitment to a relationship, if you decide that those are the restraints that you want, and not necessarily even restraints. But the problem is that religion is dictating to people that they must get into these relationships that require and or expect monogamy, and they're not monogamous people. And that is what's going to lead to the situation. There are many, many couples who make it comfortably through their entire relationship into their 80s without cheating on each other.
Not as far as God is concerned, though, or as far as God was concerned prior to the cross.
Excuse me?
I said not as far as God was concerned before the cross, because as Jesus taught it, anybody that committed adultery or fornication,
yes,
absolutely. In their heart.
And now, of course, we're talking about another subject. We're talking about the issue of what was used to bring us all to our end. And it's just like if the laws against eating shellfish. That law is going to get an awful lot of people. It would never get me. I could be as holy and righteous as possible when it comes to the law against shellfish. But not every law propels everybody to do that very thing. But some law somewhere is going to get you.
Yeah, but
because
how?
We are human, and that's what the law was given for, was to cover all, because none of us are the same. None of us have the same propensities for the same things. The law about homosexuality does not mean that that's going to cause heterosexual people to start craving homosexuality or partners of the same sex. It means that those homosexual know they are condemned.
That the Christian dogmatic stance against both extracurricular or premarital sex and on homosexual sex has had a factor in people's actions, especially in the last 30, 50 years since mass communication has been so available on these issues.
Oh, absolutely. But do I know that that's the case with Tiger Woods? I don't know.
Yeah, but what as far as in wrapping up this particular discussion for tonight regarding Tiger Woods and the women, including his wife, that he has slept with, how does God see them?
Of course, they are absolutely righteous and holy and perfect in God's eyes, and that is the good news that I have had the privilege of sharing with this planet, as far as my voice can reach and as far as my voice is taken by others through CDs and tapes to other places and lands and other peoples. And that is the overriding thing. When it comes to people dealing with each other and their own our own stuff, it's all over the map. The variations are beyond the possibility of measuring. But we have an overriding, as we did have a law that was overriding, that it didn't make any difference which one of us had a propensity for what. We are all condemned. And the very same overriding nature of God now has taken charge and has declared that we are all righteous, no matter how well or how bad we do. So the issues of morality and what people's choices are and why they do what they do will vary from person to person as much as a fingerprint will.
Well, we are now graced, if you will, by the appearance of our special guest tonight. And for more than a decade, Dr. Adam Bordes has been educating and entertaining audiences all over the country, from large corporations to small nonprofit organizations. Dr. Adam pulls from the years of onstage performing experience to engage his audience while he delivers life-changing information about their health. And Michael met Dr. Adam Bordes on his journey in Alaska this last summer, or late in the summer. And now we want to welcome online, and please help us welcome Dr. Adam Bordes from Austin, Texas. Adam!
Glenn, how are you, my friend? Michael, how are you guys?
Hey, Adam, it's good to have you on tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah,
how are you doing?
It's our pleasure for sure.
Thank you.
So, Adam, tell us a little bit about yourself and what your background is and how it came that you met Brother Michael Williams.
How I met Brother Michael. Well, the short version of the very long and colorful story. I actually started out my career as a psychology major. I think as any one of us men would want to understand people, and specifically women. I wanted to understand women, and after 3.5 years, true story, after 3.5 years, I came to the very painful conclusion that I was never going to understand women. So I decided to
Adam,
sir.
Understand women, so...
You do? Okay, please enlighten me, because I'm still trying to learn this every single day.
Well, all you need to know about women is mm-hmm. that the original Garden of Eden story, mm-hmm. that it's God, ironically, took the rib of Adam and, of course, had created Adam from the dirt of the earth, and then took a rib of Adam and created Eve and created women. So all you need to know about women is that women are earth double refined.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, so now you know the rest of the story.
Now I understand. Yeah, they didn't teach us that in school, so if only we could have had this conversation years ago. So that is how it all started. It started with that. I decided to make the exciting but frightening change to something that I was also passionate about, and that was food and exercise, and trying to understand how to help people and make some changes. And from that, I ended up wanting to learn more and take it further. So I decided to go to chiropractic school. And when people ask, why does a chiropractor teach what you teach? And I said, well, I learned for the first half of my career, I learned what would happen to the body if we made changes. And the second half of my career, learning what would happen to the body if we didn't make those changes. So I think it all kind of, it came full circle in lecturing and writing the books and really having the opportunity to share this message all over the country. It's been great.
So if you had to say, since we've been on the subject, how important is human sexuality to the overall health of a human being?
Well, sexuality, of course, you know, I think obviously it comes from a certain place in our heart that we have to be in a committed relationship with one person, and at least in my eyes. And, you know, from a health standpoint, they've proven statistically that people who are intimate with the people that they love, they live longer, they live healthier, they live stronger, and they're more centered, they're more focused in their lives, and their overall quality of life is better. It's been proven.
We're talking with Dr. Adam Bordes. This is a special guest of the Gospel Revolution, Glenn Klein Online, along with Michael Williams. So you go on this cruise in Alaska, and give us an idea of how you came upon Michael Williams and what transpired from there.
Funny story. We were sitting on this cruise, had no idea what to expect, and we sit down, and we had tickets, so we're thinking it's going to be some type of a show, right? You know, it's just, you know, Katie and I are sitting there, and all of a sudden two gentlemen come to where we're sitting. It appeared to be almost like a booth in a restaurant, and two gentlemen sat down. We start speaking with them, and it's already pretty close quarters. Katie and I are sitting right next to each other, and these other two gentlemen are sitting across from us. And 15 minutes later, this towering man of 6'4" plus, with a very, very good-looking head of shaved hair, no, and his friend comes sitting next to us.
Wait. A head of shaved hair.
Head of shaved hair. That's
kind of an oxymoron,
known as. It is oxymoronic, in fact, but it was the shiny goodness known as Michael Williams' head. So he and his friend come over and sit down, and I have to be completely honest. I lean into Katie. Katie leans into me and says, oh, this is going to be interesting. We're already on top of each other, sitting squeezed into this really close confines of a little restaurant booth, and Michael sits down, and after probably 15, 20 minutes of us talking about, you know, what brings you to Alaska, where you're from, how long have you been here, whatnot, we start talking about life, and we start talking about what we each do, and as a speaker myself, I was fascinated and completely intrigued when anybody tells me that they speak and they lecture, and when we inquired further, we found out what Michael does and what he speaks about, and the words inspirational, life-changing, I mean, any number of words come to mind about that conversation. I mean, we sat there for, it was hours, and we could have sat for hours longer, and the truth of the matter is, everybody was clearing out. We docked in wherever we were ending up, and we just sat, we kept talking through everybody leaving. We were the last ones off the boat, and it was an amazing experience, and I think we've had the opportunity to spend some time together again here in Austin in a recent visit, and it's been an amazing experience. We've been truly blessed by having the opportunity to have met and now gotten to know Michael.
All right, so the question that I have is wondering how it is for a complete stranger to meet Michael and to have him explain to you what he does. How did he explain to you what exactly he does?
that's a great question, and I think as any good teacher would do, and Michael really epitomized that for me, and me as an educator myself, I'm always trying to understand how do you help people understand your message, and he reached us through common ground. He helped. He listened. I mean, I can't say more than, I don't know. Michael seemed to listen to us talk maybe 90% of the time, and he listened. He listened to what we had to say. He wasn't preaching at us. He was just listening to our perspective, and saying, "Look, tell me where you're at, and then I will tell you my perspective on life and on religion and just life in general." It was very natural. It was a very easygoing conversation. And I honestly, I hate to say this, and this may sound kind of, you know, cliche and cheesy, but I think Katie and I both were almost in a trance just listening to his level of understanding and understanding his history, understanding Michael's life as to how he got to where he is now, what his experiences leading up to what he's doing now and how it evolved.
Well, we're talking with Dr. Adam Bordes of, am I pronouncing your last name correctly, Adam?
Bordes, you can call me whatever you want, my friend. I've been called a lot worse than Bordes, so you can call me that if you like.
All right, so it's Bordes.
And Bordes, now, Glenn, you know why the conversation actually went so easy. I mean, when somebody tells you they don't even care how you pronounce their name, I mean, how can you not get along with somebody like that?
We're talking with Dr. Adam Bordes from beautiful Austin, Texas. So, Adam, where were you and Katie vis-a-vis spirituality and religion and all that prior to having encountered Michael Williams?
I have to admit that I come from a mixed religious background, meaning my dad was raised Catholic. I'm Italian by heritage, and my mother wasn't. My mother was just, she believed in God, but didn't really follow any particular religion. So I was almost indoctrinated very early on, and as a consequence, I kind of resist it. I think a lot of people do, and it's the interesting segue into what I talk about now. I don't indoctrinate the rules of living a healthy life. I kind of come at it from a similar perspective that Mike did with me. And
yeah, well,
you know,
you folks need to know, and we'll talk about this as we go on in our discussion with Dr. Adam, but he actually prescribes and suggests chocolate as part of a healthy regimen.
Yay.
We'll get into that momentarily, but continue, please.
So, yeah, chocolate is, in fact, a religion in my life, just to put that out there. But, yeah, I think that I've been exploring for a long time, and I think the reason why I, and a lot of people, and I could speak for the masses now that I'm on the other side of the fence, I could speak for a lot of people that I've run into in my life that the my God is better than your God discussion, I think it scares a lot of people. And I think a lot of people want to believe in something. A lot of people do honestly believe that there is something bigger and better than themselves, that they are a part of a much bigger plan. But I think people are intimidated by it because it's not presented in such a way that people feel welcome. They feel like, if I don't believe what you're telling me to believe, I'm going to burn. I'm going to, you know, it's always the consequences of not believing my product, so to speak. And when someone finally breaks it down, and that's what that happened with me, at least. I mean, Katie comes from a different background, but for me, at least, when he broke it down to where I felt comfortable listening, he wasn't talking at me. He was listening to me and Katie as well, but hey, tell me where you're coming from, and let me help you understand how that already ties into this whole idea of spirituality, whether it be Christianity, spirituality, whatever the case may be. But it was coming from more of a, you know, my arms are wide open to you. Help me see where you're at, and then I'll help you see how you're already tied in with what these people are talking about.
So where were you coming from? Did you think that there was a possibility that you and or Katie might end up in a eternal hell, an eternal torment, before you met Michael? What was your feelings, and what were they based on?
I always, when people ask growing up, you know, what religion do you practice, I say, you know, jokingly, I practice atomism. I believe what makes sense to me. I wasn't, at that point, I hadn't prescribed, so to speak, or I should say, I hadn't adapted a certain mindset based on what my family felt, what I learned on Sundays. I hadn't adapted any particular mindset, so I just believed what made intuitive sense. Now, that, of course, got me into trouble because oftentimes there's a little bit of, okay, you know, Jesus is coming back, and then if we don't believe this, then we're going to burn. And, you know, it just, that didn't make intuitive sense to me, but that didn't matter. It just doesn't make emotional sense, and did it fit within my model of the world.
But were you concerned at all about that?
About the ramifications of not believing?
Correct.
Oh, of course. Now that I'm learning more, and I'm understanding more and appreciating more, I think it's definitely something that I'm paying a lot more attention to, that's for sure.
Well, what in your relatively brief encounters with Michael have you gained, and has Katie gained, vis-a-vis the understanding of eternity and where your place is with God and other human beings for that matter?
Well, I think it really helped me, that brief meeting, as brief as it was, several hours of it, I think it made me understand that big picture now, I mean, of course we could talk for hours about this, but I think big picture it helped me understand that there's a reason for everything. There's a reason why we're all here. We're all given and blessed with certain gifts that we are, you know, we're bestowed with these gifts that, you know, we choose whether or not to share those gifts with the world. And I think Admittedly, I think Katie was a lot more rooted and is a lot more rooted in understanding than I am. So
Why is that?
Well, she grew up with religion and spirituality in her family, where I resisted it from the beginning. I mean, I just coming from two sides of the, you can't root for the Yankees or the Mets at the same time, sort of thing. So I didn't take a stance. Or I didn't want to pick a side. I didn't want to disappoint one or the other by choosing, okay, I'm going to believe in strict Catholicism versus Christianity versus believing in quote unquote spirituality but not following an organized religion. I think when people say that, they haven't chosen sides yet. I think a lot of people are scared. A lot of people are scared to do that. So with the encounter with Michael, I think again it was made for me to understand him and life and religion more from just a side that I never really understood, never really saw before.
This is fascinating for our listeners over the world. This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Dr. Adam Bordes from Austin, Texas, who encountered Michael on his recent voyage to the great state of Alaska. I have to ask, Adam, so based on your discussions with Michael and based on the experience and the background that you've articulated to our audience, what have you picked up on? What do you feel now about your relationship with the eternal and your standing with God and your place after you've breathed your last breath?
Well, as a 30-second backstory. About 10 years ago, I lost my grandfather to something that, in my eyes and in my mind, I felt he could have maybe done a little bit more to prevent, but just didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to prevent it, and that was the time that I made that transition for myself from the educational direction I was taking to what I evolved into. And I came to the conclusion very early on that I have been blessed with a big mouth. I love talking about stuff, and B, a sincere and just this relentless passion for helping people and for teaching people just with the information that I was given. I was blessed with a certain amount of information about the body, and it's the one constant in my life that I'm so fascinated about how the body works and quite contradictory how the body breaks down, and understanding that helped me kind of come full circle into understanding and appreciating the fact that if I don't give back, if I don't just hopefully I'll have the opportunity over the rest of my life to share what I've been given. And I feel that was part of my calling. That's the gift that God gave me, and I feel that I would be doing him and the world a disservice if I didn't do what I was put here to do.
Glenn, one of the things that I wanted to say was that the thing that I noticed in the encounter, other than just thoroughly enjoying meeting this beautiful couple, I know that I've spoken about them on the program before, and Adam and Katie, there's already a whole lot of people that really love you guys just from the encounter that I was able to describe, and it was a wonderful, wonderful time, and it was like parting from family, as Adam had described. But the thing that I saw for myself, for Adam and Katie, and he's right, they came from backgrounds that were completely different as far as religion was concerned, and also, as Adam said, Adam had just left the door open because he didn't want to make a decision as to who was right or any of those things. Whereas, as Katie had, as Adam had described, Katie had been raised with a certain mindset. And so the interesting thing was, as we addressed those things and we just talked there, And it wound up with just me and Chris and Katie and Adam. The other two guys left and, you know, found other things to do on the ship rather than sit in on this conversation, I suppose. And but even with them, and here is the thing about the gospel, is as distant as they were in their spiritual concepts, I think the thing that they came away with was a very common ground of acceptance and amongst themselves. And they had, whereas before, I don't know how well they were able to communicate about those things, but I know that when we walked away from that table, there certainly was an open territory for them to explore together. And it really was just it was a wonderful time. Of course, Chris was there. A lot of people know my friend Chris because he does travel with me at different times. It was at the convention last year, actually, but Chris wasn't able to come this year. And of course, Chris there, you know, making sure that everything is kept lighthearted and always throwing in his comments along the way. But we really did. I think the understanding of our unity, regardless of our backgrounds, regardless of our sexuality, which that became an open topic, also. At the table, and all of these things just kept breaking down, and all of these things that normally hold people at a distance from each other just kept breaking down, one thing right after the other. They just kept falling apart, you know, as we continued to talk, and really came down to a wonderful thing that which the gospel does, I believe, and that gives us a common ground. It doesn't make any difference where we come from, what our religious perceptions are, is that we didn't walk away from there, them knowing what Mike Williams believes and me knowing what they believe. We really walked away from that situation with an understanding of what God thinks when he sees us. That he has a view and an opinion, and rather than us being divided by our opinions of God, we really coalesced around an understanding that that we were looking at what God's view and opinion of us was, and we found out, and the thing that we were exploring was the possibility that God sees us all exactly the same. Regardless of sexuality, regardless of even our own personal religious persuasions, that those opinions that can divide us, that there is an opinion that possibly comes from God that breaks down all of those divisions.
Regardless of your being a chiropractor?
Even if you're a chiropractor. Even God accepts chiropractors, you know, so...
As unimaginable as that may seem, right?
that's reaching way down there, isn't it, Adam?
Adam, if you were able to describe what Mike was telling you about God's view and opinion of humanity and yourself as somebody that encountered perhaps the gospel for the first time through Mike Williams, how would you articulate that to somebody that you were explaining to about this guy that you met on a cruise in Alaska?
I would say two things. He breaks it down to where all of us could understand, and you got to meet this guy. Honestly, those are the two things I would say.
But what would you say specifically about the religious constructs that obviously to this day permeate our society and that Mike was articulating to you guys through those several hours of discussion? Specifically,
what would it specifically? Man, you're going to get me talking about this for a while, aren't you?
That's all right. I've done this for a few times. This ain't my first rodeo, brother.
Nice. Oh man, I I think, and, you know, I could honestly say that, you know, and you know, again, we could talk about this for forever, but I think, you know, the perspective that was given, I can't say specifically what, you know, it's like saying, you know, are you in love? Yes. Well, how do you know? Well, you just know. It's one of those kind of things. I don't know if I could honestly say specifically, you know, when he said this, I felt that, or it changed this opinion of life and the world. I think for me, honestly, Glenn, it was just the way it was presented, the way it was broken down for me, it helped me get it. It was in such a way that if anyone is on the fence, if people don't understand, and again, I think that right now, if I said specifics, I would be doing that conversation a disservice. I mean, it's just the amount.
Yeah, I want to know what you felt personally. I mean, you don't worry about how anybody interprets it. What did you personally get out of that experience, more than in just generalities, but in specifics? For example, do you believe that God is ever upset with you?
Ever upset? I believe that I think I'll love to believe that God is forgiving, and we are not perfect beings. As you, I had the chance of listening to you reading Tiger's statement. None of us are perfect. We all make mistakes. We all live and do things that we know are probably not in the best interest of ourselves, our families, our friends, the world. But I don't think that we're being, that would make him a condemning God. And I've never believed of God as being someone who, you know, shakes his finger at me and says, okay, you know, that was never my view of the world.
Well, then you are a very lucky man. Because most people,
I hope so.
Because most people think at some point God is condemning them. And that is our whole vision, that is our whole impetus behind this effort, is to get people to understand that God never condemns them.
Right.
And far from being atomistic, you are actually very Christ-centered in your philosophy. If you never thought that God was condemning you, and you're a very fortunate person to think that, but the vast majority of people that we speak to around the world each week, and as we travel around the world, and as Michael goes and gives his presentations, as he did recently in Houston, to people that came from all over the globe to hear him speak, is that God is not a condemning God. God is an all-loving God. God is a God of perfect forgiveness, regardless of our actions or our thoughts or our deeds or our belief system. Right. And as we've talked about many times, we've been doing this particular webcast for over 3 years now, that people that were not under that Christian condemning viewpoint of God ever in their life are very, very fortunate indeed, and it would be better not to have been in that place in the first place. But but there are, of course, hundreds of millions of people around the world that either were raised in that or did have some sort of experience and then got sucked in to that legalistic mindset. And you're a very fortunate man indeed. We're talking with Dr. Adam Bordes from Austin, Texas, who Michael encountered. Is Katie there with you tonight?
She's in the other room. She's hiding.
Can she say hello to us for a quick second, and then we'll get back on. We want to talk about your book too, but we want to hear Katie's voice if you can get her online.
So as to realize that she's not I think she's hiding. She's hiding.
She doesn't
want to
get
out. Just yell hi.
Hi!
You see, Glenn, I told her she was, in fact, a real human being.
She lives!
That's Katie.
Awesome. So, Adam, tell us about your book and about your whole practice down there and what your perspective is. I looked at your website and your whole health regimen. It looked very interesting to me, especially based on my vast experience with weight loss and health regimens, and give yeah. the folks an idea of where you're coming from and how they can glean the information that you've gained over the years.
Well, quite honestly, this book came out of desperation on my part. And what was happening was that I was myself reading all the books and listening to all the CDs and listening to all the speakers on how to live healthier. And what I started noticing was that they all had one thing in common, and that was that they had nothing in common, right? I mean, every one of the books and speakers and experts, they all contradicted each other. One person says carbs are bad. The next person says, no, carbs are good. Don't eat fat. And then the next person says, oh, cardio is the way to lose weight. And the next person says, well, lifting weights is the way to lose weight. So, but of all the information that I learned, I spent a long time learning this stuff, whether it be in school or outside of the classroom, I did notice that all of them had four underlying themes. And the first theme was that I had to eat right. And even though every one of them had a different definition of what that was, I knew that was theme number one. I had to eat right. The second theme was that I had to move. And here again, some said cardio, some said weights, some said yoga, some said Pilates, but that was the theme. I had to move. The third theme was that I had to not make stupid decisions. And to me, what that meant was that I had to avoid the things that I knew were bad for me. I know intuitively smoking is bad for me, so I choose not to do that. I know that drinking excessively, doing drugs, doing those things, I know intuitively those are bad, so I choose not to do those things. So that was the third theme. I had to not make bad choices. And the fourth theme was that I had to keep my weight under control. And what I started noticing was that even though all those things made logical sense, no one really told me what that meant. No one told me what to do. No one told me how I needed to eat, how I needed to move, how I needed to not make bad health decisions, and how I needed to lose weight. No one told me what to do. So out of sheer necessity on my part, quite honestly, I started experimenting with different things, and I actually started losing the weight. So,
were you overweight?
I was. I've been as high as 30 pounds more than what I weigh right now. And just some of the really easy things that I talk about in the book and, you know, I talk about on stage, it helped me lose 30 pounds in 6 months. I mean, these things are not difficult, and they're not what I call position-based health. And what that means to me is that I don't take a position. I don't take a carbs are bad position or don't eat meat position or don't do or do these other things. How do I even put it? I don't tell people how to live their life. And what I notice is that in the real world, we all live by a certain set of standards, right? We all have a schedule. We all have busy lives. And when someone, whether it be a doctor, a dietitian, a pastor, whatever the case may be, when someone tries to install or uninstall a behavior, people inherently resist that. And I didn't want to do that with this book. So all I did was, in 100 or so pages, give one health tip per page. I call it the picture book. It's basically an image in the center of the page and a health tip underneath it. And it's something as simple as, you know, eat chocolate before large meals. Why? Well, that boosts your blood sugar, so when your blood sugar is elevated, you're less likely to eat more. And the things like that are so simple to do, and I never tell people, don't drink soda ever again. Don't eat pasta because pasta will make you overweight. I never tell people what to do or not do. Say, look, here's a cheat sheet. When you don't want to read a 300-page book on how to live a healthy life, here's 100 or so pages, and when you're in the restaurant, when you're at home, when you're at work, when you're going to the supermarket, these are the things that you could keep in mind. 5, 10, 12 tips in each situation. These are the things that you need to be thinking about. So when you come out of the situation, you actually made a healthier choice.
Well, give us an idea of your top 5 tips besides having some chocolate before dinner.
Well, that clearly is the top tip. I mean, that alone should sell, you know, put me on the bestseller list. I think, and by the way, there's nothing, I will say this on every discussion that I have about the book, every lecture that I would ever do, I'm not saying anything new. There's nothing that I would say that someone will hear and say, oh my goodness, I've never heard that before. But going back to what I had said about my conversation with Michael on that boat, I'm going to put it away in such a way to where people could actually understand it and digest it and implement it. So the top five, that's all you want? Five? I got about 100 of them.
Give us five just to tease the folks, and then we'll send them
just
to your website
to
for more.
Tease the folks. Okay, so the first thing that I would say is, this goes back to portion control. I think portion control is a huge issue. And, you know, we've been talking about Katie for the past half hour here. One of the things that we started doing was we started sharing dinners. So no matter where we ate, no matter what we ate, we would order dinner at a restaurant, cook dinner at her house. No matter what we did, we would eat dinner on a salad plate, a smaller plate, and we would share everything. So something as simple as share all of your larger meals with somebody that you're with. And it brings me back to the 101 Dalmatians with the two dogs with the spaghetti strand, and they end up smooching. I mean, it's one of those things. It could be a really cool thing, and you're taking your calories that you would normally be getting, cutting them in half. If you do that every single day for dinner, you could save 500 or 600 calories a day.
All right, so you eat chocolate how much chocolate do you eat?
I usually go for maybe a small handful of dark chocolate chips. I have dark chocolate on hand at all times.
Okay, so eat some dark chocolate, and then
eat dinner
on a salad plate.
Eat dinner
what
on
else?
A salad plate. And what else? Well, going back to the chocolate thing, I'll give you two quick reasons why that works. The main reason we eat, there's several reasons, but one of the main reasons we eat is because our blood sugar is dropping. So if we figure out a way to bring our blood sugar back up, that tells your brain, okay, phew, glad you got that out of the way. I'm not that hungry anymore. So when you do eat, you're going to be less likely to eat as much. So eating chocolate before large meals, eating dinner on a salad plate, portion control, both of those, the underlying theme there is a portion control issue. The other thing is to eat something small every 2 to 3 hours. And something like that, you imagine the locomotive of a train. You know, you have to stoke the fire. You have to keep putting wood or coals in the fire to keep the metabolic engine higher. And when we do that, when we eat every 2 to 3 hours, going back to blood sugar, you're bringing your blood sugar up. So when you do finally eat, you're not going to be eating as much, and it keeps your metabolism going. We actually burn about 10% of our daily calories during and immediately after the meals that we eat, just to digest and absorb all the food that we just ate.
Right.
So eat something small every 2 to 3 hours. Eat dark chocolate before dinner. Eat bigger meals on a salad plate. And another one that I would say is to drink at least half of your body weight in ounces of water every day. And I stress ounces because I did a lecture once. I said, drink half your body weight in water every day. Someone raised their hand and said, how am I going to drink 120 pounds of water in a single day? So I will stress that this is ounces. So if someone weighs, myself, I'm 190 pounds, let's say, I would drink, of course I had to give myself an odd number, so whatever that would be, 90 some odd ounces of water. So almost a gallon of water a day for me. So if someone weighs more, they need to drink more. If we're more active, we need to drink more then. So that would be the fourth tip. And the last one that I would say, and again, we could talk for hours on this, is to watch out for high fructose corn syrup. There's been a lot of discussion about this stuff. And if someone drinks soda, regular soda, if they turn the can around, you're going to see high fructose corn syrup. And what it is, it does two things. One, cheap sweetener for the manufacturer. It doesn't cost as much as sugar does. And secondly, it actually acts as a preservative. So when the manufacturer, let's say whatever soda manufacturer, if they could save a whole bunch of money on the sweetener, they put it in there, and, you know, it tastes a lot like sugar, but it ain't like sugar. And here's what happens. When we eat food, like we talked about earlier, your blood sugar goes up. When your blood sugar goes up, you stop eating. High fructose corn syrup doesn't cause our blood sugar to go up quite as high. Your body doesn't know what it is. It doesn't know what to do with it. So
That's
we eat something with we eat something with high fructose corn syrup in it, and our body still thinks we're hungry, so we keep eating. So I think that's one of the biggest issues that we're seeing with things like soda. High fructose corn syrup is in cough medicine. It's in ketchup. Anywhere you could possibly imagine, it is. It's in more places you could even think of. And it's causing, it's a big, big contributor to the obesity epidemic we're facing right now.
Well, here's the big question. How many calories does the average human being burn in an average sexual encounter?
The average one or the one that we all...
That's the one that you and Katie have. That's not what we're talking about. We're not trying to get personal here in any way.
Right, right. I've heard, now I don't know, but I've heard anywhere, depending upon obviously how long and, you know, and a lot of factors, I've heard that it could go anywhere from 100 to 500 calories.
So that's a pretty good thing to do, then, you would recommend to your patients.
Absolutely. They say the target is 2 to 3 a week is a good target. So that alone will help you lose a pound a month.
All right. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Great advice from Dr. Adam Bordes of Austin, Texas. So, Adam, if folks want to get in touch with you, do you have a regular chiropractic practice there in Austin?
I do. I'm practicing at an office called The Joint.
Naturally, nice.
Someone like me, I couldn't work at a regular chiropractic office. I have to find one called The Joint.
The Joint.
So you could find me there. I'm in practice every single day treating patients. If someone wants to contact me directly, they could find me on the website. It's just Adam Bordes, BORDES.com. They could email me directly, find out more information about the book, see a preview of it. I have a top 10 weight loss traps PDF on there you could download, and just a handful of other cool little tools that will help you along the way.
Well, the next time we speak, we need to get Katie online with us to see how this is all actually working out.
I will do that. I will do my best. I think that might require a little more coaxing on my part, or maybe by Michael. But, yeah, Michael, maybe you and I could work on that together.
Well, the one thing, Mikey, that I have to say listening to Dr. Adam is that his advice from a physiological standpoint is very much grace-based and very much full of freedom and understanding, and that's what we're all about.
It's kind of like the gospel way to lose weight and to live a healthy life.
Amen to that, brother.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, Glenn. I appreciate it.
All right,
thanks,
man.
Adam. We love you a lot.
Hey, Adam.
Love you too. Love you too, Michael.
What's your website?
AdamBordes.com. AdamBordes.com.
Adam Bordes. We're pronouncing it correctly now.
You bet.
All right, brother.
All right, brother.
From
nice
another
talking
mother.
To you guys.
Yeah, hug Katie
too.
For me.
I will. Thanks, guys.
There's Adam Bordes, ladies and gentlemen. Well, that went a little longer than we thought, but I think well worth the time, Mikey, and the effort.
I think so. Yeah, that's. I think people have a better flavor now for why a conversation with Adam could be so productive, no matter what you were talking with him about. Just a wonderful young man. He and Katie. Just a wonderful young lady, too, and knowledgeable and open-minded. And, the commonality of Blakely was established before we ever met in his not controlling, trying to get people to control what they eat and all of the rules being kind of thrown out the window. We both were coming from kind of the same perspective of things, one on issues of spirituality and one on issues of health and diet. So good combination.
Well, if there's one thing that's for sure, if Adam could survive extended experience with Chris, then we know he's okay.
Yeah, for sure. Chris
well,
is a wonderful
we're
catalyst.
We're obviously
along
over
the
time right now, but we're going to give a few more minutes for those of you who may have wanted to get online with us tonight. It's about 10 minutes after 10 o'clock on the east coast of the United States of America. And we are happy to extend, if you want to get online with us, 1-800-436-3260. Call right now because we're going to give a few more minutes. Sean O'Halloran waiting in studio to receive your call. 1-800-436-3260 for those of you that are listening live right now. And as I said, it's about 10 minutes after 10 o'clock on the east coast of the U.S. We want to hear from you. We've taken an extended amount of time with Dr. Adam tonight. We hope it was beneficial. We believe it was beneficial, excuse me, for you tonight. But we want to hear from you tonight. 1-800-436-3260. We've got a ton of emails that we need to get to. And how about if we address one of them right now, Michael, and then we'll give folks an opportunity to
sure, let's do it.
To call. How about that?
Sure.
This one comes from Elizabeth and Meredith Ward, and this accompanied a $100 contribution, which we appreciate so much, you guys. He says, "Hi, Mike. You were going to answer my question this coming Wednesday, but will not be able to call in or listen this time. We love your teaching. I really have a problem with this pastor's cowardice." This was the guy that called you a false prophet. That wasn't very nice, was it?
That just wasn't nice at all.
Now I have missed the email.
Excuse me?
They say in there that I wanted to send you a contribution towards Houston Gathering, but could not get it to work on my computer. I'll send you a check for $100. All right,
awesome.
So let's address the Ward's concern about the fact that this guy that called you a false prophet after having heard you at Luz Rodriguez's place share the gospel, they called him a coward. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think that that was kind of my first response. I don't want to shovel too much on the poor fellow. What she is referring to in her email was the fact that he had every opportunity to speak up publicly and privately, personally, with me during the whole process of that meeting and our meal together, our time together, our discussions in private together. And I think what she's referring to the cowardice of is that he would wait and get behind his own pulpit and then voice such opinions.
And then, by the way, as you beautiful humans that follow this webcast know, we invited him to join us, and after my initial discussion with him, I talked to him twice, left a message for him. We never heard back from him. But here was Elizabeth Ward's question, Michael, that she referred to in her later email. She says, "Tonight, Michael, I heard you say that there is nothing personal about the gospel. If there isn't, where does prayer fit in?" That's from Elizabeth Ward. Where does prayer fit in this whole thing? If there's nothing personal about the gospel, where does prayer fit in?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is that prayer is not a part of the gospel. So that's why it's that now prayer, how you do it and what you do and when you do it, what you feel about prayer, what you think prayer does or does not do, is very personal. It is very, very personal. And prayer is going to fit into a person's life where it fits most comfortably. And people feel very, very much a personal inspiration, contact, if you will, when it comes to prayer. When I say that the gospel is not, you can't take the gospel as personal. It's when the church that is to refute what the church has said, that you must make Jesus your personal Lord and Savior. And there was nothing personal about it. When Jesus died on the cross, he died to redeem the entire world. And like I say to people, I take it personally as far as my gratitude is concerned. I hope that everyone takes it personally, and that is what my prayer life is gratitude. It is thankfulness. And that is from me back to God. As far as God directed toward me, it is not a personal thing in that it is an individual thing, because redemption is not an individual thing. The process of salvation is individual, but that's not under God's jurisdiction of controlling your salvation. We are the ones who are allowing information in that saves our soul, that redeems our way of thinking, if you will, and renews the mind. But prayer can be a very personal thing. But again, let me say this, that prayer is not the gospel. The gospel is the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace. The gospel has nothing to do with what we offer back to God. The gospel has nothing to do with our involvement with God to any degree, on any side, on any matter. The gospel has to do with the degree in which God chose to be involved with us pertaining to redemption, righteousness, holiness, and perfection in his sight. And when he did that magnificent work, it was a work that did not exclude anyone. Because it did not exclude anyone, there is nothing personal about the gospel. Now, there is a personal experience that we have as far as the effects that the gospel has on the heart, and that is the, I guess if you have to apply a personal experience to it, the process of salvation. Everyone is all over the map with that in the process of the saving of the soul and the renewing of the mind. But that's the effect of the gospel. The gospel is not a personal issue. It was God making the decision to redeem the entire planet, every one of us, not individually, not in a succinct fashion as far as upon our moment of decision. In fact, is the way that Paul explained it about the resurrection of the dead, being born again. He said Christ, the first fruits, and then they which are after, as they follow, after which the entire human race was raised from the dead, living and physically dead. We were all raised from the dead at that moment. So again, the gospel is not a personal issue. The entire planet issue. It is the entire human race.
Hallelujah.
Amen.
So how does that directly impact a person's prayer life? How does that impact your prayer life? How do you pray if you do pray?
Well, my prayer life is one of thankfulness now. I don't know of anything that has not that God needs to do for me that would supersede the work of the cross or be needed in union with the work of the cross. So for me personally, prayer has become an issue of thankfulness. And thankfulness isn't something I go around saying all the time, but thankfulness is something that I desire to incorporate into my life and do incorporate into my life as an attitude in relationship to God of just being grateful. may not be, you know, I spoke with a woman today on the phone, and just in a horrific situation, just of despair, just absolute despair. And I could not give her one ounce of hope that her current situation was going to change.
What was she going through specifically?
She was confined to her bed. She was going through mental and emotional torment. She had lost virtually all the members of her family except one, confined to her house, not even 50 years old yet, and yet with such health problems that, you know, she's just despairing of life. But the thing that touched her was that I told her, I said, I have no answers for you. I do not know if your current situation is going to get worse or get better. It will change, but I don't know if it's going to get worse. I don't know if it's going to get better. But my encouragement to her was that the thing that we did have, that we could rejoice about it, was that she knew that nothing that was happening to her was an implication of God's view and opinion of her. And when I started telling her, now here's a woman who desperately needs answers for her life. I had no answers for her life. But I started telling her, you are perfect, and you are righteous, you're holy, you're everything that God ever wanted in a daughter. And just floods of relief was just gushing out of her. And
Is this somebody that you've been in touch with, or
no.
Did she just reach out to you?
No, it was somebody that called today to the to my home phone, and she said that she had listened to some of my material over the years and reminded me where that she had met me in a church, and I don't think that she's kept up with a lot of the teaching. I think some of the things were kind of new to her. But I knew that I had no answers for her health situation. She most recently lost her sister just 3 months ago. Her sister's 3 years 3 years older than she, and they were you know, like soulmates, and so she's still grieving, and I told her that the grieving process would continue, but that it would end, especially if she did not see the loss of her sister as some form of punishment or retribution from God, or something that God did to her sister because of some shortcoming on her sister's part.
Had she been thinking that way?
I don't know. I just know that as I addressed those things, I could hear relief. She was breaking and crying with relief and seeing some light of day into her life, as bleak as things look for her right now. And I had no encouragement. I had no spiritual answers for her situation. But I do have a spiritual answer for who we are, regardless of our situation. And that does change how we are able to endure what life has to offer. I believe, as I've shared many times, that we are designed, we are by design, given the ability to endure loss, to suffer loss, endure loss, and recover from loss. The thing that interrupts that process, you're not going to stop loss from happening, whether it's of health or a loved one or finances. Loss is a part of life. And the thing that the gospel does is doesn't guarantee that there's going to be no losses. It stops the heart from grabbing hold of answers that are deadly. And therefore, giving you the space, the time, the heart, if you will, to get through the particular loss that we're going through. Because some people lose their health and it never comes back, Glenn.
Right.
I can't tell somebody who is ill that that everybody eventually gets well. That just isn't true. There are people who lose limbs. They're not coming back. But you can learn how to live without a limb. You know, as we saw on I saw on the Heroes thing with CNN the other night, with Anderson Cooper, a young man who lost both of his legs in a propeller accident on a boat, and now his life is filled with an entire work of getting amputees to make sure that they are able to, that especially after they've turned 18, there was a program that made sure that as children they were provided for, but not with the best equipment. And then at 18, then they were on their own. And the Shin worked to have that changed and works every day with amputees and has a very full, very, very full life. And wonders now if he would even change anything if he could take his life back to before the accident. He has so filled his life with something as a result of this that he doesn't even know whether he would change that or not. Now that is our God-given ability to experience loss, to suffer loss, to endure loss, and to recover from loss.
Well, we could go on for a lot longer this evening. We've got many more emails and a lot more discussion. But we advertise this webcast to be from 9 till 10 o'clock Eastern time. And we've been recently going well over that, as we are tonight, almost a half an hour after our allotted time. But before we go, Michael, I want to encourage the folks that the material from the Gospel Revolution Convention in Houston last month is well underway of being duplicated and will be available very soon on the website. And there's basically two series, Beautiful Humans. There is Michael's teaching, the entire book of Hebrews, the book of Hebrews, revealed and debunked, as Michael not only reveals God's plan of redemption in that incredible book throughout, from verse 1:1 of Hebrews all the way through chapter 13, but also a second series that is available that has our attendees sharing, our guest speakers sharing. So there's two 8-CD series that are going to be available at $64 each, and we're offering, and you'll see it on the website, for if you buy both at one time for $100, all the guest speakers. We had Ken Vandeveer and Rob Orr and Mark Eaton and Scott Johnson and your friendly neighborhood webcast host, yours truly, all sharing. So we've got those things in development, Michael. We want to encourage folks that those things are coming soon and very soon.
Yes, that's true. We are looking forward to getting it out to everybody. I'm looking forward. This is one I'm going to be listening to myself, you know. So, and
that's
everybody
historic,
knows,
ladies and gentlemen,
unusual
for a guy that's been
normally
in the ministry for over 30 years that's never listened to one of his teachings before. Mike is going to be listening to the entire book of Hebrews teaching because he doesn't exactly know what he teached.
I don't know what I did, so I've got to go back and listen to see.
It was really
happened.
Good, Mikey. As somebody that was present at that event, I can assure you that it was very profound and very good, but it's something that everybody's going to want to get a hold of.
Awesome. I can't wait myself.
All right, so we'll be in touch about when that's available, and for those folks either that were at the convention that ordered the series or those that either want to or already have ordered it, be patient with us. Don in Montana is busily editing and putting that together, and that will be available both on the website, and we, as I said, we will contact you by email and on this webcast as soon as they are available. We also wanted to ask you to be patient. If you email this comment or question, we will get to those eventually. But the hour and now the 90 minutes go by way too quickly. And but it was fun, as always.
Absolutely.
Well, we want to thank Dr. Adam Bordes for checking in with us tonight. And, again, his website is DrAdamBordes.com. For more information about his practice and his entire effort there in Austin, Texas, adambordes.com. You can check that out. And stay in touch with us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. I also want to thank Sean O'Halloran. Welcome back into the Bay of the Holy Spirit as he has returned from St. Louis, Missouri, after his extended vacation. And until next time, we will talk to you. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!